This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. At our first hour, we were talking about Beto O'Rourke and his rolling out his presidential campaign today. He's now officially a candidate for president of the United States. And people have been weighing in on their thoughts on that. In our second hour, Dr. Wolf dropped by, Professor Richard Wolf. And we were talking about how do empires end? And is the American empire in the process of ending? And if so, does it get really messy? Meanwhile, Donald Trump has said that he's got the ICE police officers with him. We know that he's got the sheriffs, many of the sheriffs with him. We had Sheriff Mack on this program talking about how they would stand up for Donald Trump over the law, essentially. He said he's got the bikers with him. I mean, you know, this is pretty weird stuff. We'll get into a conversation of that a little later on today. And in fact, I want to put it front and center tomorrow as well. And the, you know, basically the entire Republican, essentially, you know, war on all the rest of us. You know, will Social Security, for example, be expanded? Donald Trump is proposing to cut Social Security in his budget. He is proposing, you know, he's the guy who said every Republican on this stage is going to tell you that they're going to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. I'm the only one who actually will do it. They all want to cut it. Well, he wants to cut all three, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. On the line with us is Richard R.J. Eskow, senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future, host of the Zero Hour on React Radio and now on Free Speech TV, ourfuture.org, and this is the zerohour.com or the website, so you can tweet him at R.J. Eskow. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back, Tom.
So give us the details on exactly what's going on with regard to Social Security. I know that there's activity in the House of Representatives. There is, of course, Donald Trump's budget. I don't know if any Republicans have gone on record saying that they support his plan to cut Social Security. I'd be surprised if they hadn't. So where are we at? What's actually going on? What are the details?
Well, to me, Tom, it's one of the most interesting times for Social Security in many years in a way, because we're back to a very stark difference between the two parties in a way we haven't seen in a generation, in my opinion. We have Trump now joining with Republican orthodoxy, basically, by proposing major cuts to Social Security as well as to Medicaid and Medicare. Both Medicaid and Medicare contribute to the retirement security or disability security of people who receive Social Security, because Medicaid pays roughly 60-65% of all nursing home costs, for example. So it's very important in the lives of seniors, and Medicare, of course, being critically important to seniors. So we have the typical, in addition to the budget cuts to Social Security itself, we have Trump falling in line with the standard GOP assault on retirement security and the security of disabled people in this country. But on the flip side, we have something we haven't seen in a generation, which is legitimate hearings in the House, in this case, the Social Security Subcommittee, on expanding Social Security. We have a couple proposals to do that. The recent hearings were on Representative John Larson's proposal to expand Social Security benefits. Now, it's not the most left of the proposals out there, but it's got enormous support, and it does increase benefits. It's got more than 200 co-sponsors, meaning it's well on the way to passage before it even gets put up for a vote. And the hearings today, to me, it was, as much as anything else, the crossing of a symbolic barrier, because as far as I know, it hasn't been since Social Security was expanded in several ways in the 1950s that we've had the House of Representatives actually holding serious hearings about expanding Social Security. And as you know, that was very much part of the political zeitgeist at the time. You had President Eisenhower, a Republican, boasting in 1956 in the Republican Party platform that Social Security benefits were extended or increased to 10 million people during his first term. So you had a consensus in support of expanding the program then, and I believe what we're going to see is a majority consensus again in favor of expanding Social Security.
Yeah. Meanwhile, with regard to Medicare, and Medicare for all, you know, this whole idea of expanding Medicare into a national healthcare system like Canada did back in the 1960s, Pramila Jayapal and Bernie Sanders have a very specific bill, hers in the House, his in the Senate. I believe that they're harmonized, correct me if I'm wrong, that would do just that. And now we're starting to see some pushback from this. I noticed one of the Democratic presidential candidates this morning who announced this morning, Beto O'Rourke, was specifically asked about that in a town hall meeting, and he basically just said he embraces the idea of everybody having access to high-quality health care, which, of course, is what Ronald Reagan ran for re-election on in 84. And then I think the next year he signed that bill that required, that made it illegal for emergency rooms to turn people away if they couldn't pay. And then the Republicans ever since have said, well, everybody has access to health care in America. What's going on here with this, Richard?
You know, Tom, I listened with great interest to your first hour, your discussion about Beto and about Nancy Pelosi saying that, values come first, which I think is true. But I think in the case of Medicare for All, its support for it has almost become an assertion of values as well as support of a specific policy, because, words like access are words that some of us have come to view with a certain concern and healthy skepticism, I think, because access to something you can't afford, for example, isn't really access at all. So I think, we can debate the specifics of the Medicare for All bill put together by Representative Jayapal. I happen to think it's extremely good and extremely strong, but the underlying values behind it are that cost should not be a factor in getting the medical care you need, that if people need care, I've lived through a generation of health policy where it was felt that you created copays and deductibles partially so that employers could pay less to cover their employees, but partially because it was believed it was a kind of social engineering, as if people would just frivolously get care they don't need if those things weren't in place. I don't think people believe that anymore, and I think people are now saying it's a shame when, as was the case with a young teacher recently, someone dies because they don't feel they can afford $160 copayment to buy the prescription medications they need to control a serious flu. Yeah. So I think that's where we're at now, Medicare. Go ahead.
Well, I was just to wrap this up. Did I read this right? Is it actually true? Is this actually going on that the Trump administration and the Republicans are proposing that they begin taking the names and identities of people who are on disability or on any kind of disability, Social Security disability, and look at their Facebook pages to see if they can find evidence that they're not really disabled? I mean, everybody, no matter how much pain they're in, can pull off 3 seconds of a smile for a picture for Facebook, and everybody knows that the way that people portray themselves on Facebook, is not really their real life and doesn't show their real challenges and difficulties and all these things. We all kind of put our best face forward, our best foot forward. Are we looking at a situation here where large chunks of people who are on disability might suddenly find themselves having to go to court to defend their disability claims because they posted some pictures on Facebook 5 years ago?
Potentially, and at the same time that the Trump administration wants to cut the administrative budget so that there's nobody there to hear their case, they could have their benefits cut off. And it's another way, it's a very draconian 1984 way of demonizing the people who, these benefits are supposed to be here when we need them, and yet this is another way for Republicans, including Trump, to demonize people who do need them and make them seem like the other. And isn't it funny that the Republicans who always complain about intrusive government want to impose such a kind of police state activity on our private lives?
Yeah, it goes beyond funny. I think it's obscene. R.J. Eskow, senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future, host of the Zero Hour on WEAC Radio in D.C. and now on Free Speech TV, OurFuture.org, and ThisIsTheZeroHour.com are the websites. You can tweet him at R.J. Eskow, E-S-K-O-W. Richard, thanks for dropping by.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
Always a pleasure talking with you, too. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Stick around. It's 15 minutes and change past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you think about Beto's candidacy? What do you think about the Democratic field right now? I'm encouraged and enthusiastic. And welcome back. Denise in Calumet, Michigan. Hey, Denise, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom, and thank you for taking my call. I also want to let you know that I believe everybody that listens should sustain your Free Speech TV and contribute as I do. Thing about Beto O'Rourke isn't anything specifically about Beto O'Rourke. Trump is never going to get his real wall, but he has a Republican wall right now. And we need somebody strong enough to clean up Trump's mess, somebody who has the courage and has been out there with the courage to stand up to that Republican wall of people who have given up on their oath to the Constitution and have followed Trump loyally in all his life. So I'm going for Bernie. I'll go for anybody that gets elected to the Democratic primary, but I really believe Bernie has the guts, or Elizabeth has the guts, to stand up to that Republican wall.
Yeah, I have said I'm not endorsing, but that said, the two clear progressive front runners in my mind are Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, and then there's some other great candidates, and I share your sentiment. Denise, thank you very much for the call. Michael in Princeton, Minnesota. Hey, Michael, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Yeah, quickly, what you were talking about, Mr. Esko, about Workman's Comp already uses Facebook to stop people from drawing.
Really?
They did it in the state of Minnesota.
Oh, my.
A woman went on and posted something about her doing her garden, and she was on Workman's Comp, and the next thing you knew, they called her back to work and put her on light duty and took her off the Workman's Comp and stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, so they're they can do that.
Wow. Well, thanks. Go ahead.
We're talking about the horse race of the candidates for presidency, mm-hmm. but I do believe that Donald Trump is really doing us a big benefit. We brought out the progressives, for the House.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do that for the Senate now and then get any Democratic president, I can't see that a Democratic president would veto anything that came through both houses of Congress.
Yeah.
And if they're progressive enough, they can push the president.
Yeah, I agree. And so can the people. And,
right.
The old parade thing. And this is why we need to get on this. I'm with you. Michael, thank you. Well said. Brian in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Brian, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hi, thanks for being there to listen to. You say, do a lot of great things. But I think you do say this a lot, and I think you really, I believe this, but I feel like, oh, God, here we go again with the Bernie folks. And I love a lot of things that Bernie does. And if he had been the Democratic nominee, I 100% would have voted for him, really support him. But I really hope that in the next 18 months or whatever, you can, as often as possible, say to the Bernie folks, say, okay, do everything you possibly can to get your guy in there. But if he is not the nominee, then it's not Bernie or bust. Because at that point, we will be Trump.
Brian, there's nobody out there saying Bernie or bust. I have not one single person has called into this program in a year and said that.
Last time around, that's how it went.
Yeah, I'll see somebody come on to my Twitter feed and say that, and then when I look at them, they've got like 700 tweets and 2 followers, and that's just a bot. This whole thing of Bernie Bros and Bernie or bust, it's over. Bernie's one of the candidates. We'll see who wins, and we'll all support who wins. Welcome back. Tanner in Madison, Wisconsin. Your thoughts, Tanner, on all this stuff here?
Yeah, I think if you had asked me 3 months ago whether Trump would be reelected, I would have said no. But the Democrats are just, you got to run somebody in the middle. I know it seems counterintuitive.
Oh, really? Are you a Republican consultant, Tanner?
I've been a Democrat my whole life. You guys are a little wacky with some of the identity politics and everything, but I don't know what to say. Like, Trump must be sitting back and he can't believe.
We ran a centrist candidate three years ago, and she got her butt kicked by Donald Trump in the Electoral College. I realize she got.
Yeah, I would recommend not running somebody that detestable and unlikable. But if you run somebody who's halfway reasonable, Trump's base is eroding. There's a huge opportunity for a working class kind of oriented, economically minded Democrat.
Let me just be very clear about something, Tanner, before we go any farther in this conversation. Just stop for a minute. Let me just be very clear about this.
Yeah.
If a centrist, if Joe Biden, Beto O'Rourke, whatever, if Amy Klobuchar, if any of those people become the nominee of the Democratic Party, if the Democrats in mass in primaries and in caucuses decide that who our candidate is, I believe that person can beat Trump. I believe that pretty much any Democrat right now could beat Trump. I believe he's that vulnerable, and he's going to be more vulnerable as more evidence of his crimes come out. But I would like somebody who is going to turn out the Democratic base. My concern is that we're hearing all this advice from these idiots on cable TV, these pundits, who at least half of whom are Republicans, and many of whom are big time, you know, in deep with the corporate part of the old corporate Democratic Party, who are saying that, you know, if you run somebody too far to the left, the American people won't show up. And no, what I believe is that, you know, and I think that the last 15, 20 years of the Republican Party tells us this, is that if you can turn out your base, you don't need votes from the other side. And they keep saying, oh, but you need to get those Republicans, you know, and you need to get those independents who voted for both Obama and Trump. I don't think we need to. I think we need to turn out the Democratic base, period, full stop. Okay, back to you, Tanner.
But I think what they're saying is, you know, places like Milwaukee and Detroit and Philadelphia didn't come out hard enough for Hillary because she's an old, rich, white lady. And so I think they're gonna say, yeah, Beto's fine maybe for a VP, but we really need a Kamala Harris.
Yeah, it could be. I don't think it was old, rich, white lady. I think it was just an incredibly badly run campaign. I mean, you know, her campaign, you know, it's I'm with her, really. And you know, not even going to Wisconsin, just taking it for granted. People know when they're being taken for granted. But anyhow, my point is, I don't disagree with you that if a centrist is our nominee, we should all get behind that person and help them win. But I really believe that if you want to turn out the Democratic base, particularly the minority base, the young base, and the older base of Social Security folks, if you want to turn out that base, and those are the folks who are going to be the most active, the people in the middle who are working, you know, three jobs, you know, people in their 30s and 40s and 50s, just desperately trying to hang on by their fingernails, it's going to be a lot harder to even get them to vote regardless of party. But if you want to turn out the base, get a real progressive. That's my opinion, Tanner.
Well, I think so. I think, but look, what happened in the House was those districts, those Democrats, the people that voted for Obama and then voted for Trump and then went back to the Democrats because they had an economic message. But nobody wants to hear that.
No,
so I think it's a big, big mistake if you go all in with the culture war stuff.
But the progressive message is an economic message. So,
well, why did the AFL-CIO come out against the Green New Deal then? Why, you know, when I remember when liberals used to care about unrestricted immigration, and now it's like, I mean, Cesar Chavez is rolling in his
There is no Democrat in the United States who's in favor of unrestricted immigration. There's no Democrat in the United States holding political office that I know of who is saying we should have open borders. None. And I don't know that the AFL-CIO is opposed to the Green New Deal. I've not seen any kind of policy position from them on that. Tanner, we're talking in circles here. Maura in Linwood, Washington. Hey, Maura, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I followed you since Gore got beat down in Florida.
Thank you. Maura, may I put you back on hold? I'm very sorry, but it just occurred to me that we're going to hit a break here in about 10 seconds, and that's not fair to you. I'd like to hear what you actually have to say rather than listening to you get cut off by the music that's going to cut me off in about 2 seconds here. So we'll be back with more of your thoughts on, you know, the Democratic primary, who the candidates are, and I'd like to toss something into this. Now that Donald Trump has come out and officially said that he's willing to use bikers, white supremacists, gun-carrying white people, ICE officers, renegade sheriffs, God only knows. Now that he's come out and said that these are his people? Do you think we're facing a civil war if he loses in 2020?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And I mean, this is as serious as a heart attack. This is a serious question here. Trump has just laid down the gauntlet, and I think everybody's ignoring it. It's talk radio for the sane among us. Tom Hartman back here with you. You know, one other thing I want to toss into this, and what got me thinking about this morning was listening to Beto O'Rourke talk about climate change. And he gave a very passionate riff about how, you know, his son, who I think is like 11 or 12 years old, is going to be his age in 2050. And, you know, the climate change will have really hit the fan by then. I mean, it is now, right? And what we're seeing right now is that this refugee crisis in the Middle East and these wars from Syria to Libya to Tunisia, I mean, right, the military coup in Egypt, all of this stuff is being driven by climate change. This was the thing about the Arab Spring. We thought the Arab Spring was because Barack Obama gave a great speech in Egypt about the importance of democracy, and then some guy in Tunisia sets himself on fire. And, you know, and then boom, it's the Arab Spring. It's democracy spreading across Northern Africa and the Middle East. No, it turns out actually what was going on was that climate change had wiped out millions of acres of farmland. The desert was moving south into North Africa and, you know, from Syria and the Middle East, from Syria all, you know, all the way across Libya and all the way, you know, to Sudan and everything else. And so all of these farmers had become climate refugees, and they and their families were streaming into the big cities, whether it was Damascus or Tripoli or whatever it may be. And at the same time, because there was less food being produced, the price of food was going up, and that's what that young man lit himself on fire in protest of, was the rising price of wheat. People couldn't afford food. And they couldn't afford food because of climate change. And what has our response been to that? We're bombing the crap out of a half a dozen countries in that area. We're literally taking Yemen and actually several different countries, but particularly Yemen and also Syria back to the Stone Age. I mean, we're turning their cities into rubble. Not to mention radicalizing their young people. They're going to hate the United States forever, for generations. We've got to come up with a better way to deal with this. The United States Senate just voted to say no to Jared Kushner and Mohammed bin Salman's little war in Yemen. The U.S. Senate just said no. That's a good step. But more climate refugees are on their way. This is happening big time. What we have seen so far with the refugee crisis in Europe, the refugee crisis in the Middle East, the refugee crisis, frankly, at our southern border, and a lot of that has to do with climate change because farms in Central America aren't as productive as they used to be. As we look at all of this, we've got to get ready for something really big, and we've got to figure out a way to deal with it that doesn't involve dropping bombs on people, because that not only doesn't work, but over the long term, that's just insanely counterproductive. So anyhow, back to your calls. Maura in Linwood, Washington. Maura, you're the person that I put on hold just before the break, right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. What were you saying? My apologies.
Well, I've got a lot I'd like to say. I'm 82 years old. I've lived through very bad times when my parents were talking about FDR and how wonderful he was and how he changed their lives. And when the union came and it changed my father's life at work, they were hardworking people. And they were married on the day before the market crashed. So,
wow.
You know, they went through an awful lot, lived in a chicken house that they papered with, wallpapered with newspapers and, you know, things like that. And we didn't have water accessible to us until I was 5 years old because they had to save enough money to drill a well. And then I've been through the good times and the bad times and the good times. I remember the late 60s and the 70s and the early 80s when things were just going so beautifully for everybody. My husband made decent money and my parents were retired and everything was really a good world. And then along came the Republicans and Ronald Reagan, and he changed the law. I had a son that was mentally ill, and
and there was no place for him anymore when he was having his bad things happen to him, and he committed suicide. But I'm going on and on and on. But this election, Beto O'Rourke is probably a very fine young man, but I think he needs to win an election. I think he needs to prove himself. He was
three terms, 6 years in the House of Representatives from the El Paso area.
Okay. So he does know what it's all about.
Oh yeah.
But I've been with you with Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, and I just don't think you can beat Bernie and Elizabeth. They'd make a wonderful team. And yeah, Bernie's getting up there, but I'm 82 and I'm still going strong. So why
there
couldn't
you go.
He?
You know? There you go.
And Elizabeth would be there to pick up the pieces if something happened to him. She's such a fighter. I just admire her. And I've been listening to Bernie all those years that he was on your show, and you know, he doesn't change his tune.
He
wants what I had and what my father looked forward to and was so happy about FDR.
Yes.
Because they changed his life. I've got three grandsons that are in their early 20s. They're still living at home.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford to go out and rent an apartment.
Yeah. This is Reaganomics. This is what Ronald Reagan brought us.
Maura,
you said it so well. I thank you so much for the call, and you just, it was just perfect. And in fact, you gave me the perfect setup. Reuben Bowling does a cartoon called Tom the Dancing Bug, and I saw this today on Daily Kos, and I just have to share this with you very quickly. You'll have to do this in your head as a thought thing. There's a young couple, a young man and a young woman. It's mid-1950s, okay? We're all here. It's like 1955, and they are having a picnic. And he says to his girlfriend, he says, sure is great to enjoy the heyday of American capitalism. And then suddenly, there's this bzzz, and a couple of bodies kind of teleport in. And he says, what's this? And one of the bodies says, ha ha, we are the American socialists from the future, from 2019 AD. And the young man in 1950 says, good Lord, we've been warned about the socialists. And then you see Elizabeth Warren as one of them, right? And Elizabeth Warren says, yes, being socialists in our time wasn't fun enough, so we've invented a time machine to invade the 1950s. And this poor woman, this young woman from the 1950s, she shrieks, oh, no. And then Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says, scream all you want. We'll introduce a humane and expanded system for refugees to apply for asylum in the United States. And the young man says, well, wait, that's a mainstream value today. Both Democrats and Republicans support that. And then Bernie Sanders, he's one of the socialists from the future who teleported back to 1950. He says, then we will create laws that will lower the top 1% share of income below 20% of all American income. And the young man says, but it's currently at about 10%. And then Elizabeth Warren says, and we'll make the top tax rate of capitalism a crushing 70%. And the young woman from the 1950s says, you mean you'll lower the top rate? It's 91% now. And so then Bernie and Alexandria and Elizabeth say, it's boring being an evil socialist in the 1950s. Let's go back to 2019 where we're actually scary. And then the young man says to his girlfriend, he says, they weren't socialists, but they were scary. And she says, I'll say that man was clearly a Jew, and I think that young woman was colored. So, you know, reflecting the values of the 1950s, I guess. But back in the 1950s, it was a whole lot. I mean, you know, it's like, The things that are being proposed right now, where you see these idiots on television saying, well, that's too far left. Are you kidding? The Democratic Party can't win on that. 70% top tax rate, that's way too far left. That was Dwight Eisenhower, Republican Dwight Eisenhower's tax policy. That was Richard Nixon's tax policy. I mean, give me a break. Russell in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Russell, what's up?
Oh, yes. Mr. Hartman, I've listened to you.
Get your mouth close to the microphone, please, Russell.
Excuse me, how's that?
That's better. What's up?
Okay, just one thing quickly. People call in and say we need to run a centrist candidate. Well, if 80% plus, if I'm not correct, of U.S. citizens would like Medicare for all, and if 70% plus would like the wealthy to pay more taxes, even a marginal tax rate, and over 70% are concerned with the environment, then I would say that Bernie Sanders is arguably the closest centrist candidate we have to run. In fact,
Elizabeth Warren and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the other so-called far left progressives. Well, I absolutely agree with you, Russell.
You know, the other thing I will say, which will probably be controversial, I think it will be difficult. Well, first of all, I'd like to see a Bernie Abrams ticket myself.
Yeah.
That would you know, kind of combine the North and the South.
Mm-hmm.
And that would also maybe allay fears. Oh, well, Bernie's old. Well, then you'd have a very young, brilliant woman who could, you know, pick up the slack.
The only weakness that Stacey Abrams has in that regard right now, and it's certainly something that could be overcome, although she should toss her hat in the ring, and she's talked about doing it, by the way, in order to get that national profile, is that people don't realize that she was the leader of either the House or the Senate in Georgia for years. I mean, she's not only a brilliant scholar, just an extraordinary woman, but she also has gotten a hell of a lot of stuff done as a politician. She knows how to take names and kick ass. Stacey Abrams does.
Yes, I was so impressed with her rebuttal to the State of the Union, which she wrote herself. And it was very, very... I couldn't even stand to listen to Trump. I just had to unmute until she came on. But anyway, that's my point, and I'm trying to make that... I think that's a really... It came to me recently that when people say he's too far to the left, I mean, my goodness, point out the statistics, 80% concerned.
I know. Russell, it's not. I'm not the one you have to convince. In fact, I'm not the one who's standing in the way of all this. It is these pundits
and these people who pretend
to be TV news reporters on TV who are offering this opinion constantly, and the occasional Republican consultant who calls in and says, I've been a Democrat all my life. Russell, spot on. Thank you. David in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Can you hear me well?
Just fine.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to... I'm originally from Detroit. I talked to you a few months ago because our birthday is around the same time. You grew up in Lansing, and I grew up in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that just drives me nuts is when I hear people say about Trump, he barely won. And when the person who called a couple of callers back said, well, the people didn't show up in Detroit. They did. They did, but 77,000 votes were thrown out. Plus.
That's right.
And they're probably still counting.
Yeah.
Trump won the state by less than 11,000 votes. The same thing happened in Milwaukee. The same thing happened in Philadelphia.
Yep.
The interstate cross-checking.
Yep.
And those local folks throwing out the votes.
Yep.
You mentioned earlier in the show that the Republicans already now are throwing out votes.
Yep.
It is the centrist, and I like her. I think she's a wonderful lady, but they've got Claire McCaskill on MSNBC.
I know.
I see why she lost.
Yeah.
And
if we follow her advice, we will lose again.
We'll lose again.
Yeah.
Because she's clueless. And
I don't think she's clueless. I think that she's believing a doctrine or an ideology that actually made a certain amount of sense in 1992 and no longer does. Times have changed.
Right.
It's a different time.
They have changed.
Yeah.
And she has not
kept up with that. And it's tragic that she's being offered to us as an oracle, as a sage, as a character of great wisdom. And not just her. I mean, there's a whole bunch of folks who fall into that category. David, I need to move along and get some more callers in here, but thank you. One last thing. Yeah, okay, go for it.
And the one last thing is this. The election was in November. In January, they were talking about the Democrats need to do this, and this.
Right.
They just won overwhelmingly and took the House. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And a lot of progressives won a lot of races. David, thank you. Very well said. We'll be back. It is coming up on about 11 minutes before the hour. 48 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Rhoda in Portland, Michigan. Hey, Rhoda. Thanks for watching Free Speech. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I have 3 points. One is unusual. First of all, I think that Speaker Pelosi is brilliant, and I think she should have everyone's support.
I agree.
Democrat support. She knows what she's doing. She's had the experience. She knows this man very well, and
yep.
She knows how to deal with him.
Totally agree.
And yeah, and the second thing is, it might offend you, but don't let it. I think we really and truly need to let the bloody Republicans win the presidency and just focus on getting senators in there, because they leave a mess, a financial mess, every single time. It's a pattern that must be changed. They elect someone, they spend up all the money, they create all sorts of financial disasters, which he has already done, trillion and whatever debt that's there, and then the Democrats come in and clean it all up, and then they take the blame for it also, because they've got to clean this mess up.
Yeah.
And then once the mess is cleaned up and there's some money there left over, well, we had Bush give it away 1 year, $600 extra to everyone, and then we had Obama cleaned up the banks and got people together, even though many people had their houses foreclosed and never saw a penny of their money.
Yeah.
The banks and the rich people did. And now we have this one who is ready to get into the Medicare, even to take money from that, ready to take money from the veterans who think that they love him. We have to stop that pattern. Let him win. Let him win and just try to focus on getting senators in there.
Well, I think we can do both, Rhoda. The fact of the matter is that in the last election for the Senate, because one-third of the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years because they're six-year terms and they stagger them that way. In the last election, the majority of the people running, I think it was 17 or 18, something like that, were Democrats.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're always going to have some people lose elections. This time around, although, frankly, the Democrats did quite well in the Senate, given what they were up against. This time around, if I'm remembering correctly, there are 20 Republicans up for re-election in the Senate, or thereabouts. And a number of those are seats that I think that we can pick off. Now, the wild card, of course, is going to be hundreds of millions of dollars from the Koch network, from Shelley Adelson, from the Mercers, from the billionaire class in the United States.
And the usual.
Yes, as usual. And this is brought to you courtesy of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Buckley in 76 and Citizens United in 2010.
And all the Supreme Court justices who, of course, he handpicked for certain reasons.
Yes, amen.
They're all there.
So I think we can do both. But if what you're suggesting is that we need to have a Republican in the White House when the next big economic crash comes, and therefore let it go, I'm thinking that next big economic crash may happen in the next 12 months. We'll see. I may be wrong, but you know, there are so many indicators that are going the wrong direction. On the other hand, you know, the central banks are our central bank, the European Central Bank, the Chinese Central Bank, the Japanese Central Bank. All these central banks are just pouring money, but in the form of loose credit, into the economies to keep them supported. Which over the short term, I mean, you know, it's like, how many years can you do this? Japan's been doing it for 23 years. You know, can we do it? We've been doing it for 10 years. Can we do it for 23 years? I don't know. But at some point, when the crash comes, it'll be far worse as a consequence of that.
And that's what worries me. Then they'll have to not lie. They'll have to do something.
Right. And you don't want a Democrat in the White House when the crash happens. I get it. I totally get it, because we saw what happened, back in 1929. There are lessons in history, Rhoda. You're absolutely right. Thank you for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Julie in Vancouver, Canada. Hey, Julie. Thanks for listening to us on Progressive Voices. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Longtime listener. I am on the executive board of Democrats Abroad Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
I've been involved with them for quite some time, since moving here almost 10 years ago. Prior to that, I was an election judge for the Democrats in Wilmette, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to say that I can't hear you very well, by the way. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine, Julie. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wanted to say here's a call to action for listeners far and wide. The fact is that the paradigm has changed, as you've said so often. We're facing a set of circumstances where the old paradigms don't apply. And I can say from speaking from being on the inside of Democratic Party leadership abroad and seeing a lot of the things that the public doesn't see, is that we are facing a pushback on progressive issues from a small subset of established, call them the corporate Democrats or whatever,
sure,
who simply just are operating according to old paradigms that don't apply. But they have a lot of power. And what we need, please, listeners, far and near on Tom's program, is everyone to get mobilized and involved in the Progressive Caucus of the Democratic Party. This isn't a Dem exit situation. That was a bullshit.
We can't use words like that, Julie, on the radio. I'm sorry. We have to dump that. Michael in Bronx, New York. Hey, Michael, your thoughts? Real quick.
Hi, Tom. Yeah.
Got less than a minute.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Quick.
Yeah. You asked a question regarding civil war in 2020. I think we're heading towards that way, be it through the elections or even through impeachment and possible removal. And I'm all for the impeachment and removal because I see Trump as a criminal, and we have a bunch of GOPs in Congress, at the very least, that are aiding and abetting a criminal. And when it comes to impeachment votes, each one of these senators and even House of Representatives are going to be called out to state their votes orally. And thus, each person will be on record for those that side with the criminal. And that's something that Democrats can run on.
Yeah.
And it will also push for more protections against every single person that's part of this criminal organization.
I'm with you. Michael, thank you for the call. And thanks for listening to us there in the Bronx on WBAI. Spot on. Boy, there's a lot going on. It's an amazing time to be alive. It's a great time to be a Democrat. I am so optimistic about the future of this party and our candidates and, you know, looking forward to this election. In the meantime, so we'll see you tomorrow. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Audio and video archives, visit TomHartmann.com.